These days, who isn't on a budget? Whether it's a ramen noodles every night budget, a cut back on your cable channels budget, or how in the world am I ever going to put my kids through college budget, Allstate has something just for you. The Allstate Value Plan. It's their most affordable car insurance, and it still comes with an Allstate agent. Plus, the Value Plan includes Allstate Easy Pay, so you can stay on top of your payments without even thinking about it. The Allstate Value Plan. It's the kind of car insurance that fits any kind of budget. It's Allstate for all.
There's an Allstate policy for everyone. Why not see how much you can save with the Allstate Value Plan? Find an agent near you at allstate.com today. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Property and Casualty Insurance Company and Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and their affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
The Allstate Value Plan. Dollar for dollar. Nobody protects you like Allstate.
Well, it's been like this all week. Stocks not moving too much on Wall Street, despite some more positive jobs news. Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti's here live.
Dave, the job market seems to be getting better. The number of claims for first-time jobless benefits fell substantially in the latest week to a four-year low of 358,000. There's also some better news if you're looking for a house. The National Association of Realtors says it's now easier to buy a home in most major metropolitan areas, thanks to lower prices and interest rates. Overseas, it looks like Greece will stay in the Eurozone after all, officials reaching a deal to cut spending in exchange for more bailout money. As for stocks, the Dow is up by 17 points. Dave.
Now, Lauren, you could invest $2 and get a $310 million return. That jackpot is Saturday, and it's the fifth biggest in Powerball history. The lottery game has increased its payout size since doubling the ticket price. Detroit is putting some of its new cars on display in Chicago at the auto show.
Ford features its muscle car, the Mustang. The 2013 Shelby GT500 coupe goes topless. If convertible is your thing, you'll want to check out the Corvette 427 with 505 horsepower V8. GM unveils the new Acadia here in Chicago, and VP Tony DeSale tells Fox News Radio that they've made some changes to stay ahead of the competition.
We've changed the exterior and interior design, added things like characteristics that'll stop you in your tracks, front LED headlamps, for example. Soft touch materials on the interior of the vehicle.
This is another green auto show, with Ford showing off the Fusion and Toyota highlighting its Prius line. The Chicago Auto Show opens to the public tomorrow. At the Chicago Auto Show, Jennifer Kuiper, Fox News Radio.
Now, the price of oil is up about a dollar this morning, nearly $100 a barrel again, as gas has crept up a bit. Self-serve regular at about $3.49 a gallon, according to AAA's nationwide survey. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD4, New Rochelle.
Our weather forecast for today, calling for sunshine and a nice day after early morning icy spots in and around the area from last night's light snow and flurries. We are going to have sunshine and temperatures will warm up very nicely with high pressure building in from the west. Temperatures in the upper 40s today. Northwest winds at 10 to 15. It'll be clear tonight. Nighttime lows down to near 30. And then sunny weather on Friday. Friday's highs into the middle 40s. A change takes hold on Saturday. It'll start off with an increase in clouds on Friday night. And could be some light snow and snow flurries towards daybreak on Saturday. Nighttime lows in the lower 30s. And Saturday's looking like an overcast day with occasional light snow and snow showers throughout the day into the evening. Daytime highs in the upper 30s, lows at night down near 20, and sharply colder weather moves in for a couple of days. Sunday will be the coldest, partly sunny, only near 32 degrees. Monday it'll be sunny, highs of 30 to 35, then it warms up back into the 40s on Tuesday with an increase in clouds, and looks like some rain for Tuesday night and Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower-cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of school superintendent Richard Organishak, Lou Felicione, Bob Lebensold, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy. There's always something happening right here at 1460 on New York's last independent community radio station, WVOX and WVOX.com, for you and yours.
1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, February 9th, 2012, the 50th. Day of winter. We hit the halfway mark of winter this past Monday, just 5 weeks and 5 days to spring. Although in truth, it is hard to imagine the difference between this gloriously warm and snow-free so far winter and spring. I was grumbling because I had about a 16th of an inch of snow on my windshield this morning, and then I caught myself and said, oh, don't grumble about this. Just a note on climate change, not to be confused with global warming. A good example of the difference is the very mild winter we are having here and the extreme cold being experienced in Europe. Here one might say, ah, I see evidence of global warming, but in Europe they might say, oh, global warming my foot. But both would be wrong. Climate change is the dramatic difference in weather we see all over the world. More powerful hurricanes and more frequent hurricanes and tornadoes. Tornadoes where there were no tornadoes. Floods, droughts, record cold in Europe, record warmth in the United States. That's climate change, obvious. Global warming, on the other hand, is the inexorable rise in temperature by less than a degree a year of the average global temperature. Not something we notice at all, but something that could and likely will reach critical mass at some point in the not distant future and cause cataclysmic upheaval. And when I say something we do not notice at all, that's you and me, scientists. Notice it very, very obviously, and they report it, and those of us who believe that science is really the real stuff of life believe them, and others just don't for some reason. Take the 2004 movie The Day After Tomorrow. That's fictional, even fanciful. It's a prediction of the event that could happen, but it is worth watching just to get an inkling of what scientists believe could happen. If you'll recall, everything gets frigid all at once and big floods all at once. Anyway, ignore science at your own peril. We have gained 4 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 32 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. Spring arrives on March 20th. The sun rose at 6:57 this morning. It will set at 5:22 this afternoon. And we're talking, of course, here in New Rochelle on the East Coast. We will have 10 hours and 25 minutes of daylight today. The moon will rise at 7:48 this evening. It will set at 7:31 tomorrow morning. We are 2 days past full moon. Tuesday was the full moon, and the next full moon is on March 8th. Our next high tides in New Rochelle at 11:29 in about an hour and 8 minutes or 28 minutes or 18 minutes, something like that. In Yonkers, at 9:50 a.m. was the last one, so we're about 21 minutes into that one, and the same around the dial. Dobbs Ferry, 10:18, so it will be coming full very soon. Tarrytown, 10:34, Haverstraw at 11, and Peekskill at 11:13. So we're pretty high right now, for the most part. Now a note from the world of sports. Congratulations to the New York Giants and their fans. Super Bowl 46 is one of the top five football games I've ever seen. Not just Super Bowls. Super Bowls are frequently not so interesting. This one was a good one. Today we begin our 11th year of Environmentally Sound. Thanks for listening. My pledge to you is that I will bring you the best programs of which I am capable in the next 10 years as much as I have in the last 10. Thanks again to Bill O'Shaughnessy for providing me this chair. Thanks to Don Stevens for his fine professional management of the station. And where would any of us be without Debbie Schechter and our other engineers behind the glass? Rhetorical question. We would be in the soup is where. Right down deep in the hot, wet soup. Thanks, Debbie, for keeping me cool and dry. Okay, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Now, this first gentleman whose name I'm going to read died of natural causes. He was at age 49. He was Brigadier General Terrence J. Hildner, the highest-ranked person to die over there. It wasn't a combat injury, but General Hildner, he died of natural causes. They are investigating, but really, natural causes is that. He was from Fairfax, Virginia. He was the commander of the 13th Expeditionary Sustainment Command. He died in Kabul, Afghanistan on February 3rd, which was a week, which was just last Friday. I was surprised to note that General Hildner was a graduate of Notre Dame and not West Point. It's my impression that virtually all who attain to the rank of general are West Point grads. If anyone has better information than that, please call me and let me know. Also died in Afghanistan this last 2 weeks, Sergeant William C. Stacy, age 23, from Redding, California. He was with the 1st Marine Division, killed in Helmand Province on January 31st. And Marine Lance Corporal Edward J. Dykus, age 22, of Greenville, Mississippi. He was with the 2nd Marine Division, killed by an Afghan National Army soldier while both were guarding a base in Helmand Province on February 1st. The Afghani command says the shooting was an accident. The Marine Corps is investigating. These three American service members were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Nothing to be said about General Hildner, as his was just the natural death we all face. Lance Corporal Dykus was shot by a presumed ally, which is ridiculous, and only Sergeant Stacy was a combat casualty. Nevertheless, they were all Americans who died in a combat zone, and they deserve our respect and remembrance. Please keep them in your thoughts. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. All right, just briefly, time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. We saw Big River at the Westchester Broadway Theater the other night. The book is by William Hauptman, songs by country legend Roger Miller, inspiration by Mark Twain. Big River is the story of Huckleberry Finn set to music. It was first produced in 1984 in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and in San Diego, California. Then it moved to Broadway the following year, 1985. Rene Auberjonois and John Goodman played the Duke and Pap Finn, respectively. This production at the Westchester Broadway Theater in Elmsford, produced by the Family Theater Company, is, as always, worth the trip and the modest cost of the ticket. Anthony Malchar as Huck is a standout, and Fatai plays a credible Jim. It runs longer than it should, but when you have such rich material, how do you figure what to cut? Nevertheless, an audience should not have to sit so long to get what Huckleberry Finn is all about. It should be fun. It shouldn't be at all tedious, because Huckleberry Finn is just a fun story. It's one thing to read a novel, then put it down, then pick it up again, and quite another thing to sit through the entire story with just one intermission. The acting is quite good. This is a young group. And the singing and five-piece orchestra, which is actually a band, there are no strings and no woodwinds, really, they're decent. And the dancing is a highlight. That was pretty good. I could nitpick it all day, but the bottom line for me is enjoyment, and we did enjoy the play. And, of course, the full-course dinner and hospitality at the Westchester Broadway Theater is always great. My first guest today is Dr. Warren Smith. He's speaking to us from Nevada. He is a specialist in family medicine. Welcome, Dr. Warren Smith.
Oh, good morning, Bob. It's good to talk to you again.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to talk to you again as well. It is about 7:16 out there in Nevada.
That's right. It's still early.
We like to know how weather is in every place that we speak to. How is the weather in Nevada today?
You'd love it. Right now it's 52 degrees outside. The sun just came up, and it'll probably hit around 70 throughout the day.
Yeah, Debbie is just shaking her head and grumbling. Well, we have the winter, but as you must know, it's been quite a mild winter here.
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Smith, you are a specialist in family medicine. You invented a device which we have discussed before in this program called the Biffy.
Yes.
I could ask you to describe it, but before I do, let me just tell people that while this may sound like an infomercial in some way, because I am so personally enthusiastic about the device, I assure you that it is not. I first acquired a Biffy back in, I think it was 2008 or 2009, when I first had Dr. Smith on the show. And when I had my bathroom redone, it broke. So I had to replace it. I just had to replace it. So I called Dr. Smith and I replaced it, got the nice new chrome model. So whatever we discuss, this is not something that that I'm being paid to say. I'm really enthusiastic about this. Okay, now, given that intro, Dr. Smith, tell us about the Biffy, please.
Well, as you know, Bob, the Biffy is a device that retrofits onto any toilet to change it, in essence, into an ever-ready bidet. It started about 10 years ago. I had a patient who had no arms below the elbows, and he was 18 years of age, and all those years he'd had to call somebody to come and clean him, which is pretty demeaning for a young man. So I developed this thing so that it would fit on his toilet, and he could lean over with the stump of his arm, the elbow, push back on the handle, and wash himself off, and so that it would turn itself off because he had no ability to do manual dexterity at all. And it worked out very well for him.
So his quality of life improved?
Oh, I think tremendously, yes.
And of course, as a physician, that's just got to be what it's all about.
And that's what the company really stands for. For the most part, we approach this from the health standpoint, and that's done very, very well for my patients and, of course, for now, tens of thousands of others. But along the course of that, other people naturally saw the Biffy, and they developed an interest, so we began to manufacture these and sell them. And the company does moderately well. We don't promote it aggressively. We're not in the big box stores. We're still primarily available online. But the Biffy performs quite well for us. Recently, we came out with a metal model, which is a chrome finish.
The chrome model was okay.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street kicks off the day in a sea of green. Word that political leaders in Greece have reached an agreement with lenders, EU leaders, and the IMF is lifting stocks higher. A Greek government source says a statement on that agreement will be released soon, and the plan does include new austerity measures on the Greek people. At 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow was in positive territory, up 34 points. News that jobless claims neared a four-year low last week, also boosting the markets today. 358,000 people filed for first-time jobless benefits. That's lower than what economists had forecasted. The four-week average, which smooths out volatility, also fell to its lowest level since April 2008. And more states are getting involved in that major settlement with several large banks over alleged foreclosure abuses. Fox Business's Charlie Gasparino reports that California and New York are likely on board with the plan after initially holding out for better terms. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Adam Shapiro.
It's a scientific fact. Men can only hear certain frequencies during basketball season. So the jewelry store at Macy's is sending subliminal messages over these radio wavelengths.
He can clinch it here with this one free throw. So Daniel Nathan of Chicago, Illinois, you just need to focus and get your wife that diamond tennis bracelet she wants for Valentine's Day. The whole season is on the line, and while we're at it, Christmas was months ago. Take down the holiday lights!
She's trying to tell you something. This Valentine's Day, get her what she really wants from the jewelry store at Macy's.
Community station in the New York metro area. Your own WVOX, the local station with a national reputation. WVOX Worldwide, AM 1460 and WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
We are back, Dr. Smith. I'm sorry we did not anticipate that break. It caught us all by surprise. You're still with us, right?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, good. My apologies. You were discussing how the Biffy is available online, how it came to pass. The question that I have is did people start asking about it in their homes, or did you say, you know what, this could be useful in homes, and then went from there? Which came first?
People asked about it. The practices are busy here, and that wasn't a new sideline I was looking for personally. Uh-huh. But as time went by, you naturally become more and more enthusiastic about something like this that offers benefits to people and the environment, obviously, since it drastically reduces paper use. So it just kind of grew out of that and has grown 20 or 25% in its size every year.
That's true. Okay, let's just make sure everybody hears several times that the way to find more is at www.biffy.com, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now, I had the original model, which had a plastic arm, and as I said, it broke when I replaced the toilet. It just could not withstand the pulling the bolts off and the abuse. Now the new one, however, is chrome, and I presume this probably would not have had even that problem, which is really not a problem. It's
right,
just
yeah.
That was an anomaly. Now, you just said it's an environmental product because it does not it does not use paper, and I confirm that. Our listeners, just imagine if you don't know what a bidet is. You have a stream of water which you control completely. You control exactly where it flows and exactly how much pressure. There is a valve. It's just a very elegantly designed device. You clean yourself up after using the bathroom, and you don't need paper. I keep a washcloth handy, and I just blot the water away. Occasionally, there's a little use of paper. We don't have to go into the details. But actually, you do save on paper. And not only do you save on paper, but if you can just take that one step further, you are not abrading of what is actually a delicate area. Why don't you tell us about that, Doctor?
Well, yeah, that is a very delicate area, and many problems that people suffer, such as hemorrhoids probably coming to the top of the list, are caused by abrasion and not so much by straining, which is a common misconception. And abrasion, paper is a wood product, so it's pretty scraping to do that. The problem with the Biffy is once you get used to it and then you have to go back to paper, it's a pretty shocking sensation to do that to yourself again.
I never leave the house anymore.
People say they don't want to travel because they don't want to leave.
I don't want to travel. I'm going on a cruise to Alaska in June, and instead of anticipating it, I dread it.
Yes.
No, okay, so all kidding aside, we certainly can still survive without it, but I guarantee, this is a personal guarantee, and this is not a commercial, that you will love this device. Let's talk about the ambient water heater just a bit. You don't use the electricity. You don't use anything, really. It's just the same water pressure that comes from your pipes. But this very ingenious water heater, what it is a little aluminum or stainless steel, probably, tank. That sits there. Why don't you tell us, Doctor?
Well, it is a little stainless steel tank, and it sits in line to the water supply to the Biffy. And if water coming out of the wall, rather, is, say, 40 degrees, like it might be in for some of our customers in Canada or the Northwest, that's awfully cold when it hits the bottom end. So we create a weigh station in between. It's a stainless steel tank, and it sits in the room. It holds about 1.6 gallons, and it keeps it at room temperature so that when you turn the water on, whatever temperature your room is about what the water temperature will be. So it's very comfortable.
Indeed, I confirm that. I never have a problem with jumping up because I got hit with something cold. It's very comfortable. Let's just talk about the cost briefly. The original Biffy, which is still available, the plastic armed one, was about $99.
That's correct.
And the chrome one is what, about $169.59?
It's $169.
Now, what is the advantage other than just sturdy and attractive?
Well, it is so much more attractive, as you know. The, the first one was utilitarian, and it does the job it was designed to do. And will last for, you know, years, typically. This one has an indefinite lifespan, and it is elegant to look at it. It is nice as any other fixture in the bathroom.
Okay, so they both work very well. Now, say something about urinary tract infection.
Well, they're caused by bacteria in the perineum, which is the that region of the body. And if the reason that we get urinary tract infections is because bacteria around that area crawl up into the urethra and the bladder and infect it. So if you could keep those bacteria away, you could get rid of most infections. And any kind of a thorough water wash to the perineum will do that. Not so much a shower, but when people are using the Biffy, they're sitting on the toilet and the full weight of their body is there, so that area is completely exposed. And we did a study on this to see how many bacteria were removed. And the bacterial counts were reduced by in excess of 98%.
So you've said that the Biffy turns the bottom into one of the cleanest places in the house.
It sure does.
That's very, very clever. Let me just go back to the beginning. You created it because you had a patient with no arms. That patient, as I recall, was afflicted with thalidomide. His thalidomide was a chemical. A drug taken way back when for pregnant women. For, I don't know what it was indicated for, but it caused numerous birth defects, and that was the reason for this fellow needing it, correct?
That's correct.
So yes, you see how even those kinds of anomalies, even those kinds of tragedies and disasters can lead to something good. So that's one way of looking at that.
Well, we're proud of that, probably more proud of that than almost anything else we do.
Excellent. How did the name Biffy come into being?
It means bathroom in old English usage. It's not a current American word, so we liked it. We thought it referred to the place and the product. And
you mean it's like a WC? It's just a word we don't use in this country?
That's right. It never was used in America. Wow. But if you were in England today and you talked to an older person and you said, "Where's the Biffy?" they'd know exactly what you meant.
Huh.
It would be their bathroom.
Okay, so it's biffy.com, B-I-F-F-Y.com. I personally recommend this device. I think if you get it, you will be hooked, and you also will dread your cruises to Alaska and other exotic places. Yes. Dr. Warren Smith, thank you so much. I love your product, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Bob, and keep up this good show that you have.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Jackpot, Bungee, Contacook, Sandwich Landing, Rye, or Pahrump, Nevada, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Lebensold. We'll be back with my next guest in just a minute, Debbie Schechter behind the glass, and we will be right back.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. With New York and California now signing on, most states have agreed to a settlement with five big banks over bad mortgages and abusive foreclosures. Attorney General Eric Holder.
It is the largest joint federal-state civil settlement in the history of this nation.
Up to $25 billion, with some homeowners getting lower payments or easier refinancing. Kodak is getting out of the digital camera business to focus on printers. And President Obama giving some states a pass on No Child Left Behind.
The president is granting waivers to 10 states from the requirement that students must be proficient in reading and math by 2014. Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, Oklahoma, and Tennessee all must have a viable substitute plan. New Mexico was denied, but it might get its waiver later.
Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz at the White House. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Today's Whitney Media public service broadcasts are brought to you by the attorneys at Silva Thomas, the fast-growing family law firm with new offices in Manhattan, Westchester, and Long Island. Headed by the distinguished and highly respected attorney Michelle Silva, the new Silva Thomas law firm brings a refreshing and compassionate understanding to a most difficult area of the law. The Silva Thomas lawyers know well that divorce and the litigation that often goes with it brings a bewildering array of legal and emotional concerns. That's why this unique family law firm, admired by judges, legal experts, and their colleagues at the bar, is always very much aware of your goals, your objectives, and your overall life situation. Everyone is different, and understanding that is what makes Silva Thomas a standout in their field. That's what sets them apart. Divorce, separation, child support, and the all-important financial picture require not only the expertise Michelle Silva Thomas has gained in many years of distinguished practice in matrimonial law, but also, again, that keen understanding, which is uniquely hers. Michelle Silva Thomas can go over and review your options and the important choices facing you and your family at the new Silva Thomas office at 340 Madison Avenue near Grand Central, or at the Silva Thomas offices in the heart of downtown White Plains or on Long Island. Respected by other attorneys and by the judiciary, Michelle Silva's new firm, Silva Thomas, is a great resource when life turns sad and difficult on the home front. Now at 340 Madison, 212-920-6464. Silva Thomas PC, great lawyers who really understand. In Manhattan, 212-920-6464.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
All right, weather forecast for today, it's going to be a sunny Thursday with our highs in the upper 40s. Northwest winds at 10 to 15. A few icy spots, though, in the early going this morning, and it warms up nicely with sunshine, mid to upper 40s. Clear skies tonight down near 30, sunny on Friday. Friday's highs in the middle 40s. Clouding up on Friday night towards daybreak, could be some snow showers, nighttime lows in the lower 30s. Occasional light snow and snow showers on Saturday, with Saturday's highs in the mid to upper 30s. Sharply colder Sunday, partly sunny, only near 30 degrees. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Westchester, the Bronx, and now the world on WVOX.com.
The sound of power.
Have your own radio show. Call David O'Shaughnessy for availabilities. 914-636-1460.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460. I am Bob Lebensold. This program is environmentally sound. And are we having a winter here or what? I'm looking out the window. I see no snow, even though there was some on my car this morning, just a dusting. And I see the sun. Huh. Pretty cool, eh? Pretty cool. My next guest is Jeff Rook. He's the director of PEER, P-E-E-R, which is Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. PEER is one of the most active whistleblower protection organizations I know of. I mean, it is the most active whistleblower protection organization I know of. That doesn't mean it is the only one. Speaking to us today from Washington, D.C., welcome Jeff Rook.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's the weather like in D.C. today?
It's similar, high 40s, sunshiny, and suggesting that nature will take its revenge at some future date.
Well, it is in Europe right now. They're dying with the cold.
Yeah, no, that's what I understand.
And literally dying with the cold. So that,
we have flowers blooming.
Yeah, no, at the very beginning of the hour, we discussed the difference between climate change and global warming. Global warming being just a tiny incremental rise in the average temperature globally. But climate change is dramatic and easily observed. Unfortunately, there's still many people who say this is all God's will and science is a bunch of crap. But what can I say?
Well, I hope they have hurricane shelters.
Well, some of them do, and some of them, I don't know. I've spoken to people who are religious and who speak about that, and some of them make sense, and they say that science certainly has a place, and others they just kind of don't want to hear it. So, like, I get kind of frustrated. Okay. I mentioned that PEER is a major whistleblower organization. Certainly not the only one, I'm sure, because how could you be the only one? Are you, I would say you're the most active. What do you say?
Well, we work on environmental matters, and so that's our niche, though it's a big one. There are other organizations that sort of do soup to nuts, public sector, private sector, or even specialize in particular areas such as the military.
Well, okay. Well, we'll get to the your environmental tasks or mission when we talk about EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson in just a minute. But first, let's go back over one of your dramatic successes with U.S. Park Police Chief Teresa Chambers. Now, I don't see the environmental connection there. I guess you could stretch and make one. She was fired by the Bush administration in July 2004, not just fired, but taken from her office. Her badge and gun were taken. She was escorted to the street. I mean, that is ridiculous treatment. However, the good part about that is through her and her husband's hard work and yours, Pierre's work and Jeff Rook's work, she was reinstated and sworn back in to that same position on January 31st last year. So, because of her back pay and court action, she got $2 million in addition to her job back.
It was the highest level public sector whistleblower victory we're aware of. And the reason we were involved is that what she told the Washington Post in an approved interview, so it wasn't like she went off to the Post, she had her press secretary there, she was the head of an agency,
right,
was that they did not have enough officers to patrol the parks and protect the national monuments. And that wasn't welcome news in the first part of the Bush administration, where no one could say anything discouraging, even if it was unavoidably true, because the mission of the Park Police, which is the oldest constabulary in the country, was established by George Washington, and she was the first female police chief chosen after a nationwide search. After 9/11, they had redoubled the patrols on the National Mall, which caused them to take officers off out of parks and the parkways. They're sort of the main, one of the main urban police forces.
And their rationale for that, let me just interrupt for a second, was because terrorism, 9/11. And
correct.
That's okay.
But they didn't provide any additional officers. And so in her case, what had happened is the union had gone out with internal staffing figures showing that basically these cuts had to be someplace. And a park police officer died on one of the parkways when he was hit after trying to control a traffic accident. And he had no partner, and a partner is one of the major safety feature. In any event, that had just happened. And so the union took these materials to the Washington Post. It's actually the police beat reporter. And he, before he wrote the story, as most reporters do, go in through the front door of the agency and ask the spokesperson to confirm. She was asked by her superiors to be the spokesperson, and she wouldn't lie. That's why she was called the Honest Chief. And so through the remainder of the Bush administration, this happened in 2003 and played out. She was put on paid administrative leave for almost 8 months, and so she wasn't fired until 2004. We litigated and got many of these ridiculous kind of pretextual charges that were used against her thrown out. And then to our surprise, when the Obama people came in, they kept litigating and signaled that they didn't want to settle the case, that they did not want Teresa Chambers back. And so we litigated to what is somewhat rare in this world, a final judgment by the court saying she will go back on this date. It was a little more than a year ago.
January 31st, 2011.
Right. And so we trotted over to the Department of Interior, Teresa, another counsel, and me, to be told by these Interior officials they didn't want her back and that she shouldn't come back. And we had to explain to them that we weren't there to negotiate. We were there to work out the details. And fortunately, in this past year, and we keep in regular touch with Chief Chambers, things are going well, and she's enjoyed being back and has found it very rewarding and has not found any interference from management. But the fact that the Obama administration kept litigating, and as, from what we could tell, they had not settled any of the whistleblower cases that arose out of the Bush administration, and you may have other guests that can tell you about the new cases that have been started under their watch, including criminal prosecutions of people that have come forward with important information.
So what was it with the Obama administration? Was it just something that was under President Obama's radar, or was he actually did he actually believe that she shouldn't be back?
I don't believe it was a White House decision, but I get the impression that on personnel matters, this White House is sort of like the janitor who says, I don't do windows. They don't do personnel.
Well, is that just this administration, or is it just too overwhelming for the actual executive cadre to I mean, there's zillions of things that go on. You can't look at all of them. Presumably, you have good people who reflect your views in place.
Well, you should look at some, or at least a few,
yeah.
And we haven't seen them look at any. And we've seen other administrations that have come in with a far different style. Huh. And, I mean, Bush did it to the point of criticism, where he would make sure that sympathetic people were brought up through the ranks and that those they didn't consider sympathetic were purged.
Yeah.
There's been nothing like that, so that in many cases you have a lot of the Bush holdovers that are still in place. The Clinton administration spent an awful lot of time trying to remake the agencies and in many instances appointed genuine reformers who came in and shook up the way things have were done in particular agencies. Looking across the landscape of federal government now, I don't see anyone that would qualify as a reformer. Even some of the greenest appointees, for the most part, have had kind of low-profile, status quo sort of tenures.
So is Obama just too gentle for this job of president? I mean, I have believed in him, and I certainly will vote for him because there's no alternative that I see. But what am I missing? You know, I was enthusiastic about him, as were many, many other people, which they had to be in order for him to be elected. Where is his lack?
I don't think these issues are a priority, and I think that they are focused on a few very big things and view anything that's not on that limited agenda as a distraction for which they should not spend a whit of political capital.
But it's not a question of time and learning the issues. It's the political capital. They shouldn't butt heads on things like this, even though they may be aware of them.
Right. And while the Bush people were noted for their fascination with message control, the current administration is even more so.
Really?
In the sense that they want each week choreographed.
Huh.
And so they view situations like, do you remember the woman from USDA who was fired for a clip, Shirley Sherrod, and then had to be they wanted to reinstate her and apologize because the clip had been taken out of context by a right-wing blogger?
Yes, I remember that.
That they viewed that as just a huge distraction that they wanted to put behind them and didn't reflect on what that said about the way they were handling personnel actions. The idea that she would be precipitously fired by cell phone suggests the management style that's a little bit difficult.
All right, Jeff, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back with you in just a couple of minutes.
All right,
you are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Egg Harbor, Little Egg Harbor, or Hohokus, New Jersey, Giants Neck, Connecticut, Brady, Montana, Brady, Nebraska, or Brady, Texas, or Manning, Oregon, North Dakota, Iowa, Arkansas, or West Virginia, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live, and we will be right back.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. A school suspension for the No Child Left Behind law in several states.
The president has long sought a rewrite of the law worked out between President George W. Bush and the late Senator Ted Kennedy, but Congress hasn't come up with a substitute. So the president is granting waivers to 10 states from the requirement that students must be proficient in reading and math by 2014.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz.
Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, Oklahoma, and Tennessee all must have a viable substitute plan. New Mexico was denied, but it might get its waiver later.
First-time jobless claims last week at a nearly four-year low. And before the Grammy Awards this Sunday, several awards.
The pre-telecast is streamed live worldwide and will feature performances by current nominees, including a Ladies of Gospel segment. Awards for 68 categories not featured in the telecast will be given out.
Fox Radio Sabrina Sabah, Fox News. We report, you decide.
we're the Renovators. And when we need to record a song, we go to the Loft Recording Studios. But when we need some hardware, we go to Cornell's. 310 White Plains Road, Route 22, East Chester, New York. Cornell's!
When you can't be near a radio, connect to our website.
Oh, they have the internet on computers now.
And listen anytime, anywhere.
The website.
WVOX.com.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. We are speaking with Jeff Rook of PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Let's jump to current EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson. The EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States government. It's the biggest and most significant, most powerful environmental agency in the country. In October 2009, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson declared, and you'll recognize this quote is coming from your website, that eco enforcement by the states needed to dramatically improve and that one of her top seven priorities was to strengthen state enforcement through tough and consistent oversight. Now, the Inspector General says that none of this is happening. What's going on?
A new report by the Inspector General found that state enforcement programs are underperforming and noncompliance with anti-pollution laws is high. The level of enforcement is low. They found, quote, EPA does not effectively act to curtail weak and inconsistent enforcement by the states. They also found that EPA lacked a coherent national enforcement program. They made several recommendations, the main one of which EPA resisted, which was they form a coherent program so you can do consistent comparisons from state to state. And in essence, what this means is that there's been this silent environmental rollback that very few people are talking about. It has nothing to do with new rules or regulations. It has to do with the fact that the current laws aren't being enforced.
All right. Well, let's be very specific as to what current laws we're talking about. There are myriad, probably, but let's just talk about Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act. I think that's pretty most listeners can understand. When we're talking about Clean Water Act, we're talking about keeping the water safe to drink, and Clean Air Act, keeping water safe to breathe. The EPA has to, those have to be their two top responsibilities, keeping the air and the water safe. How would you grade them on those two things?
Well, the Inspector General graded them as missing in action. And we'd had our own experience on particular locations. For example, we'd been working on a Koch Industries paper mill, a Georgia Pacific paper mill in Arkansas, where state authorities allowed the Koch Industries to turn a stream into basically an industrial sewer.
Koch being coal, right?
Koch being the Koch brothers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I was confused, perhaps one or two others were too. I heard Coke, I said, we're not talking about soft drinks here, even though Coca-Cola is involved in a Grand Canyon thing, but let's not bother. I'm sorry
right,
to cut
that's
you.
Another story.
Go ahead, the Koch brothers.
We took the case to EPA, and they as yet have declined to intervene. Another case has to do with Boca Raton, Florida, where the utilities agency there has had a complete breakdown, according to numerous whistleblowers that have come to us and provided documents that say that the utility is routinely allowing wastewater, basically coming from toilets, to mix in with drinking water.
Well,
EPA has yet to act on that one, and that one's going on 2 years.
So why? I mean, is it just incompetence, or is this a...
We view it as a lack of will. It goes back to the earlier conversation, which is when EPA intervenes in these cases, they create kind of a local backlash, and in some cases a state backlash, and this isn't anything that the Obama administration is willing to spend chips on.
Okay, Jeff, we're talking about... water from your toilet going into your drinking water supply.
You know,
what could be more basic?
I'm trying to be the choir master here. I absolutely agree, which is why we're the ones yelling about it. I mean, we think this is astounding.
Well, how could,
even if EPA shelved all of their new regulations, they could dramatically increase protection for public health just by enforcing the current laws we have.
They have the power to just step in and do it. They have armed people, don't they?
Well, not so much.
They do have
armed people, but they don't need armed people. These are laws that they have delegated to the states, but they did not give up jurisdiction. They shared jurisdiction. So EPA has jurisdiction over all these matters, and oversight of the state means that EPA is supposed to make sure the states who are getting federal money to run these programs are doing it according to national standards. And the whole point of these laws was that it shouldn't matter what state you live in, the extent to which your environment is protected from vapor intrusion or toxic soil or what have you.
But who do you have to push back against? I mean, who stands up and says, no, we want toilet water in our drinking water? Nobody's going to stand up and say that. So where's the pushback?
Well, the pushback is that the local entities want to be left alone. The idea of federal intervention brings images of, in the words of one Republican congressman from a decade ago, jackbooted thugs.
So anarchy, in other words. We'll do it, even if we're doing it, a terrible job of it. That's the best we're going to do, and don't tell us any different, even though we are nominally a member of the United States.
That's why we thought the Inspector General report was so important. We were experiencing these kind of abdications on an anecdotal level, case by case. What the IG said is looking across the country that this was a pattern, that EPA basically had taken its hand off the enforcement tiller and was letting the states do what they wanted to do. Many states have budgetary situations that are causing them to cut back on these programs, and if EPA isn't holding their feet to the fire in terms of the number of inspections and enforcement actions that they're supposed to be taking, the states will cut back because then it becomes a discretionary program.
Okay, so tell me about the health ramifications of these things. I mean, it sounds disgusting, and I'm getting nauseous just talking about this, but let's just say, is it healthy to drink water from a toilet? I mean, maybe our bodies can handle that, or are people getting sick and dying from this?
Well, nobody knows the extent to which people are getting sick because none of this is tracked. So there are a number of thousands of illnesses that aren't accounted for that some theorize come from environmental factors such as food and water. But if you're not even tracking what people are being exposed to, you have no way at the other end to establish some sort of causal connection between this and that, which is whatever health effects they've got.
Well, you know, when the Obama administration took over, you know, I was hopeful as an environmentalist. I thought, okay, here's somebody who's going to be rational about things. I know the Bush administration was inattentive to such things, but I'm really disappointed that, and again, I have to repeat that Obama's my president. I certainly support him. I will certainly vote for him, but he is not a perfect president. Of course, that's an oxymoron, no such thing. But it's a disappointment. And I guess you're disappointed as well.
We thought going into this administration that EPA was going to basically pick up the reins of state oversight again. And many of the people that contact us asking for assistance work in the state enforcement agencies. And they're contacting us because they're frustrated, because their own chain of command, in many cases under political pressure from a governor or a legislature and the industries that are funding them, are unable to do their job.
So in the past, during
the Clinton years, for example, in a number of instances, we were able to get EPA to intervene in these situations where the state had fallen down on the job.
And, of course,
that hasn't been the case under Obama.
You would get those, everybody who knows what you do, you would get those calls, so you're probably better informed than pretty much anybody.
Well, and that's why we have these cases, is that individuals have come to us and said, this is an example of something that should be addressed, and we can't do it from inside our agency for whatever reason.
So what is your liaison with the Obama administration, and how can you, other than bring lawsuits, how can you lobby people to do the right thing? Maybe I'm naive.
Not a lobby, but we can draw attention to it and try and generate public pressure for people to do the right thing. So you just made reference to Coca-Cola, this episode where Coca-Cola pressured the Park Service to block a proposed ban of plastic water bottles. When we went public with the information that the Coca-Cola influence was what was behind the decision for the Park Service to intervene to block what Grand Canyon was trying to do.
But they denied it.
Within 3 weeks, 100,000 people signed a petition at change.org. And within 5 weeks, the Park Service announced a new policy that was going to let the parks go ahead. And this week, Grand Canyon said, we're going to go ahead in, I think it's 60 days.
and enforce the ban.
Right. And so to me, the power of public pressure and, more importantly, the power of ridicule is equal to that of litigation, though we do a fair amount of litigation.
You are an attorney, are you not?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess what you bring to this debate and to this program is why I have you on every once in a while, Jeff, and I'm going to continue to do that. I am disappointed in the Obama administration in some of the things that are lacking. You can't blame everything on Bush, and you can't blame everything on a Congress that's not cooperative. There are certain things he can do. He can tell Lisa Jackson, get on the stick or get the hell out, but he won't.
I believe that, as you know, we opposed Lisa Jackson's confirmation based upon her record in New Jersey, which was very pro-industry and very sort of accommodationist. And things like, for example, in New Jersey, under her tenure, they eliminated their research arm. They rolled back a number of regulations. They privatized hazardous waste cleanups, and whistleblowers were routinely suppressed.
All right, Jeff.
But we get the impression that that was probably the type of person he wanted to run EPA.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to keep our eyes open. And, of course, I get your newsletters all the time, so I will
stay
in touch.
We'll continue to spread sunshine.
And, yeah, and the next time something jumps in front of my eyes, you can expect a call.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'd like to thank Dr. Warren Smith and Jeff Rook for joining us on Environmentally Sound this morning. Thank goodness for a compassionate inventor who has made an affordable appliance that makes my daily life just a bit better, actually, more than a bit. And without Jeff Rook, the world would be a harsher place, one in which some noble men and women would not have the opportunity to set things right when they are wrong. Our thought for the week, I hope there are enough Americans who will simply vote for their own best interests. Whatever biases you may have, be they race or political perspective, just vote for your own best interest. If most people do that, Barack Obama will be reelected going away. He's not a perfect president. As I said before, that's an oxymoron. There is no such thing. But I believe he's a decent, smart guy who believes in the ideals of the United States of America. Unless, of course, you believe that America stands for greed and special interest. Obama has spent 4 years trying to undo the damage done by his predecessor and has been struggling against a partisan Congress which cares nothing about you and me, only their own power. Re-elect Obama, give him a filibuster-proof Senate, and watch America grow up before your very eyes. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A. Next up, Howard Sturman. I do not see him. Hopefully he'll be here. Thanks again, Bill O'Shaughnessy and Don Stevens, as we start our 11th year. I am Bob Lebensold, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. Everyone, you are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.